हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमभिर्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 15. Okay, let's just, yeah, go straight through. Antas tad dharmo padeshat. Paramatma is the person in the eye and the sun, because the teachings describe the Lord's qualities. Sutra Prakashika. In this sutra, Vyasa argues that, quote, unquote, the person within the sun and, quote, unquote, the person in the eye must refer to the Supersoul and not the Jiva. This is because the person's description does not fit the Jiva, free from sin, free from karma, fulfiller of the living entity's desires, the awarder of the fruits of action, and the object of the worship of the living entities. Right? So it can't be describing the living entity because the qualities that it describes with don't fit the living entity. Right? They only fit the Lord. Because right? Remember, the Mayavadis are always trying to somehow or another find a way that they're the Lord. So by describing it as the Jiva, we might look at it, well, they're just because Mayavadi, so everything's illusion. So anything with form and qualities must be illusion. That's there. That's their impetus for getting out, impetus for not taking part in the world. But their real underlying motive is they want to be God. So therefore, the qualities that are attributed to God, they'll attribute to themselves. But it's not that it's all illusion, so this is also illusion. It's all illusion, but this part's okay. You understand? It's a very underlying element. Yes?
So we all have our inherent individual nature, so is there such a thing that you can actually attain something that's not within your inherent capacity?
Or is it but what do you mean by inherent?
As in like your original position. So then, because we're always talking about attaining.
Okay, so you're going with the original position, not the the tree and the leaves one. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. So, but what do you mean by the inherent nature of the jiva? Because here we're discussing on this level is that the jiva is within the material world. He's not the one free from sin. He's not the one free from karma. He's not the fulfiller of the living entity's desire. He's not the awarder of the fruits of action. And he's not the object of worship of the living entities. So, therefore, it can't be talking about the jiva. It has to be talking about the supreme. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Shigovindabhasha, Vishaya. Atasa yon tar adityo hiranyamayaf purusho drishyate. He who is seen in the sun is a golden person, having a glowing mustache, glowing hair, glowing from the tip of his nails, and having eyes like a blossoming red lotus. He is called Ut. He has risen above all sins, because Ut means also up. Right? Like that. He has he who knows this rises above all sins. So one who understands that Krishna's position is transcendental, he also becomes transcendental. So, the Rig and Sama produce a song concerning this person. Thus the song is called Udgita, and thus the singer of that song is called Udgata. He is the ruler of all worlds above the sun, and of all the objects of enjoyment in those worlds. This is the meditation on the Lord. Chandogya Upanishad 1668. Yeah, so it means if you understand the philosophy, then you can see is that these Vedic verses are actually very straightforward. Right, so if you're not worried about how they're constructing the words and everything like that, you're just seeing what it is that they're saying. Does it make sense? Because otherwise, the language of it's a poetics, but it's a very it's an intellectual poetics. We're used to mind poetics. They sound sweet. But this is poetic to the intelligence. That'll be the difference between the Vedic verses and the classical. Right. Does that make sense? Yes.
So this golden person we refer to as Surya Narayan?
Yes.
Okay.
We shouldn't?
Yeah, we should.
Okay.
I'm confirming.
Okay.
You just answered a question I always wondered about. They say the Gayatri Mantra is poetic.
It is poetry.
Yeah, well, it's not poetry. It's not poetry. If you chant it, it doesn't sound like poetry. There's no rhyming words, there's no alliteration, but it's poetic in the intellectual sense, not in the mind sense. There's no rhyme, it doesn't rhyme.
No,
either
do haikus.
Yeah, but
no, I'm just joking here. Yes, so because in the classical Sanskrit they'll use all those different things because there it's about the sweetness, it sounds nice in the ear. Here it's about the intelligence. It's very poetic intelligently. You know, you use these very interesting, because the point is nirupta, means generally nirupta we'd be chanted, given as vocabulary. But actually the meaning means obscure meanings. Right? So for classical Sanskrit it'll just be vocabulary. But in Vedic Sanskrit it means obscure meanings. So the tendency is to use an obscure example or obscure way of explaining than a direct one. While the classical may use both like that. And so the indirect, you can tell it becomes a little bit more poetic in here. Right? So that indirect. So the same way as the Vedas, because it uses these indirect, how you say? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So therefore, it. Hang on.
Yeah. What would be the difference between Vedic and classic Sanskrit in a nutshell?
The Vedic is that the meanings are also described by the tonal qualities in that is there. That's the main difference. It means the grammar of all the grammar of the classical Sanskrit applies to the Vedic, but the Vedic then has another 300 sutras or something that explain the grammar of the swaras, of the notes, because those notes are why it has a grammar, because they're not arbitrary. Those notes actually, they also are part of the meaning. Is that make sense? Yeah. So without the swara, you actually don't know exactly what the meaning is. And by the swara, you can tell, just like the word Brahman. It'll have different swaras, meaning whether it means Brahman is Brahmajyoti, Brahman is supreme, Brahman is as just, the concept of Brahman, that it's all transcendental. In other words, if it's the jiva, whether it's the Lord, whether it's just the Lord's energies. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So they all have different swaras.
Maharaj, so the words in the Vedic Sanskrit may not necessarily be used in the classical, because in one of the sutras previously we mentioned that the word jyoti was being used for Brahman, referring to the Brahman.
Yes.
In the Vedic Sanskrit. So then in classical it means light.
Yes, but that's the whole point but if we talk about light, where would be the origin of light?
The Brahma jyoti.
Yes. So therefore, that's why it's going back generally to the root of it. He's known as Ut. Why Ut? He's above. He's this, like Uttama, Purushottama. Like he's higher. He's above. It mentions this. Thus, all the worlds above this, he's the controller of. Right? There's the sun, and then there's above. So, when controller of all the worlds above the sun, then where is that going to? We may take it, okay, Indraloka and these other places like that, but then above that is all the Vaikuntha lokas, above that's Galoka. You know, so he's the Lord of all these. So one who knows these things can understand. Right, so you're saying one thing, you're describing so many things, right? That Rigan Sama produced a song concerning this person, right? So the verse will always be, means the hymn is always in the Rig Veda, because the hymn means Rig. So then there are samans or songs on those Rigs, so that becomes a Sama. That's why you don't need to have Yajur in there, because the Rig is there, then there's a Sama. And it produces a song concerning this person. This song is called Udgita, right? So therefore, the person who chants the mantras and the sacrifice concerning the Lord, he's known as the Udgata. Right? Does that make sense? So all these different things, it's just like, you've seen those verses like in Chaitanya Charitamrita on Nityananda Prabhu. Right? If they're on Lord Chaitanya, it'll be down time. He's the most munificent, he's the most beautiful, he's most, like that, it kind of stays in the same area. But when it talks about Nityananda, he's Sankarshan, he's Ananta, he's the unlimited, he's the this, he's the super soul in the heart. He sees all things. So, you understand? It moves around. So that's more like the Vedic Sanskrit. It covers everything, but it just puts it all. So if you understand the philosophy, then it's very nicely, it's just very concise. But if not, it's extremely confusing. Because the words that it'll use, you don't quite understand.
Mm-hmm. Right. So classical Sanskrit is like a subset of the superset, which is Vedic.
Means you could say is that the, for at least for here, is that the Vedic is the original. Mm-hmm. Then what you would speak, in other words, the Vedic Sanskrit is what is the Veda. So you don't speak Vedic Sanskrit. Mm-hmm. You speak classical Sanskrit. Right? So what we write in and do, that's in classical Sanskrit. We don't write Veda, you know, so it's already there, but there's a grammar to understand it. So whatever we would speak and write, that's classical. So that is your Smriti, right? But the Shruti, then that's original. Does that make sense? Yeah.
It always uses a phrase in the old Vedic language or something like that.
Yes, yes, like that. But the thing is, Prabhupada knew it. He could translate it.
Yeah.
Like that. Most, except for Bhana Maharaj, we don't have any scholars that can translate Vedic Sanskrit. Like that, because it's a different category. Like that. But it's not that there's a whole lot more, it's just that nobody endeavors in that, because who deals with Vedic Sanskrit? Like, I think it was last year, year before. It comes up now and again. It pokes up its, you know, head now and again. Is that, you know, there's that discussion in Bhagavatam over the...
Vritrasura.
I'm sorry?
Vritrasura.
Yeah, Vritrasura. Right? His father chanted the mantra, and instead of getting an enemy of Indra, got someone who... Indra was his enemy. And because there was either, I don't remember what's the thing, but there's a long or a short... that he did wrong, a vowel. So, according to classical Sanskrit, the verse is there and everything's fine and they sit there arguing over as how, no, but there's not, it's not there, what are they talking about? This is, you know, this, that, blah. Right? You know, how you say? Fire flies to the sun, right? Like that. But, in Vedic Sanskrit, which not one of them knows, then... there's the thing, because if you're dealing in these kind of yajnas, these aren't Rig Yajur Sama yajnas. These will be Atharva Veda yajnas. Because anything that has to do with you want to get rid of somebody, it'll be in the Atharva Veda. Right? You are worshipping Vishnu, worshipping the demigods, that will be in the first three. Right? It's because it's all the miscellaneous. In other words, you had the whole Atharva Veda as the single Veda, and then you take all the Riks out, put them in one place, all the prose in one place, and all the Samas or the songs in one place. Whatever's left, that stays as Atharva. Right? That's how it works. So, the markings for Atharva Veda and Rig Veda are the same. So they have... is it Pranka or... No. I can't remember. It's a particular marking. And even though the vowel is short, you chant it long. And instead of it being, even though technically it's sorita or the middle note, it's chanted as the higher note. So it's the higher note in long instead of the middle note in short. So one of those he switched. So, you know, it's either it was there and he didn't chant it, or it was something happened. Right? Because it's a special marking. It's not an ordinary marking. Common, but not ordinary. So he made the mistake and didn't, either used or didn't use it. I don't remember what was the shortcoming. Does that make sense? So then these fireflies are sitting there and discussing, you know, about this, that how is it that this is that. You know, so Sukadeva Goswami says that the Acharyas mentioned it, Prabhupada's comfortable with it, but they have a problem because Monier Williams didn't understand it. Right? So that's the problem. Because they don't know they don't know Vedic Sanskrit. While the others, they know, so they don't have a problem. That's the thing. Because it's the tonal quality that makes the meaning. They're taking it just the root word and building up on the grammar. So by that, it doesn't change. But the point is they don't understand is that the tonal also has, that's why Prabhupada says that ancient way of, the tonal quality also affects the meaning. You know, it's just like in contemporary.
I'm saying it's a lot like Chinese.
Yeah, like Chinese. Yeah. You don't say the note, or you change the note, it means something else. It's the same thing. So it's not a strange concept, but the point is how many have studied it? Not that Monier didn't have a Vedic Sanskrit dictionary, but the thing is I don't know of anybody who studied it. Right? So that's what I'm saying. Bhanumar is the only one that can deal with Vedic Sanskrit. Prabhupada translated Ishopanishad, that's Vedic Sanskrit. It's actually, as an Upanishad, it's the only Upanishad that's within the Veda itself, the Samhita. See, most Upanishads, they're in the Upanishad section of the Veda. But this is actually within the Samhita section of the Veda. So it's unique of all the Upanishads. No other Upanishad has that position. That's why Ishopanishad's considered the first Upanishad. Right, so you have 108 Upanishads, of those 10 remain, but of that, the one Ishopanishad. So everybody will accept that. So when Prabhupada translated Ishopanishad, it's like you're translating the one that everybody will accept. Like that, if you're only going to do one Upanishad, you do that. So, you know, it's not that. So within those circles, we just think, oh, okay, well, it's small, it's short, you know, like that Chandogya and all these others, they're huge. Taittiriya, they're huge. So, you know, so then, you know, yeah, it's not, no, but that's because that's the core one. So there's a lot more going on than we understand. Because, you know, how you say, antyajas are not famous for, you know, being trained, you know, very diligently in the technicalities of the Vedic culture and language and everything like that. So we just don't know. And so their approach to it most, who get into this, mostly they're generally academics. Because they're academics, then they'll also take the flavor of the modern academy and how they view. In other words, their hermeneutics. They'll Krishnize it, but it's still that hermeneutics. That's the difference. Bhanumars didn't come from that side. He came to India very, very early and just grew up here. And because he's such a scholar, he decides he wants to learn something. He just learns it. You know, it's just like when I went to Muktinath. I asked them how long to go from Pokhara up to Muktinath. They said, for everybody, will take 7 days. Like that. I think it was, or no, I think it was 5 days, no, 6 days up, 5 days down. Like that. Or 7 and 6, like that. He says, but if you're Japanese, it'll only take you 2. Because the Japanese decide to do something, it's just, that's all there is. There's nothing else. You know, it's like Arjuna and the eye of the bird, right? Like that, just. So like that, if he decides he's learning Mridanga, 6 hours a day he'll practice Mridanga with full focus, not spacing out, oh, I don't know if I want to do this, but like totally committed. And after 6 months, he's an expert. So that's him. So one of the things he did, Sanskrit, and then Vedic Sanskrit, you know, like that. You know, it's just, you know, he learned you know, Indian dance, you know, Bharatanatyam. It's just, he decides to learn these, he just does it. So what would take us, you know, 10 years to learn, he does it in 6 months, you know. So, and then, you know, like that, he can learn many things. So that's special. So that's why when we do anything of translate, we always use his translations. So they may not be so literally poetic, like Gopi Puranadana. He was the best at the poetry and all that. But the meanings are very exact. So that's why we use. So,
even in English, depending on how you say a word, it'll have different meanings.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So it shouldn't be surprising.
Yeah, it shouldn't be surprising. But the thing is they are.
Like, it can mean the exact opposite thing.
Yeah, yeah.
There, here.
Yeah, yeah.
No, even the same word, like...
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Polish.
Huh?
Polish.
That too, but even the same word, like...
Yes.
Hello.
Yeah,
hello.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. No, you can just go on, yeah.
It's in everyone.
It could be an insult, yeah, yeah. It could be a greeting, yeah. It could be a surprise.
Yeah, you show up, oh, hello.
Yeah. Hello.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that the Vedic has that in it. It's inherent. It means you can't not chant it like that. So that's the point. So that's why in the rituals it has to be chanted like that. When Prabhupada says even one syllable being wrong, it throws off the whole sacrifice. That's because of that. But because of that, also, it makes it, once you memorize it, then it lasts very well. Because the classical, using one tune on it, and the same tune goes for everything. Like, the same tune you can do for the whole Bhagavad Gita. But for the Vedic, every word has a different construction. So as the different shlokas are there, the word is used and is constructed in a different way. So it makes it's harder to learn, but once you learn it, it's easier to remember. So that way, then you can expect that the priests will do it exactly without any mistake. So, yeah, good. Okay. Ata dhyatma ata yesho tar akshini purusho drishyate. Now let us discuss the body. The person seen within the eye is Rik. He alone is Sama. He alone is the Ukta. He is the Yajus. He alone is Brahman. The form of this person is the form in the sun. The forms of songs concerning the person in the sun are the forms of song for the person in the eye. Right. Yeah? So in other words, what you see means what they're describing is what you can see. What you can see is that person.
What are they describing? The golden person.
Means the same person is the same. The Lord and the Son, because that's what he says, the form and the Son. So that means he's the Lord and the Son. He's the one that's being described. So that was Chandogya Upanishad 1.7.5. So it seems to be a lot. Chandogya uses this about in the sun and in the eye. Because... why? Because the Gayatri is your main mantra of the Veda, right? Everything else expands from that. So, that being there, then it's about the sun, but it's also about seeing that person in the sun. You know, it means realizing that person in the sun. Sorry?
What's the meaning of realizing that person in the sun?
Because then you realize the Supreme.
So when we see the sun, we meditate on Gayatri, we mean the Supreme.
Yes, that's what it's about. Okay.
So far the sun god hasn't appeared to me. I'm chanting Gayatri.
Yeah. But the point is it's Krishna. So that's who you want to appear.
also in fifth canto, Krishna's, one of his names is Jagadishwara, the Lord of Sight. So even just seeing, just the fact that we could see should remind us of Krishna.
Yes.
Because he can see with the sun.
Yes. And so then also with this, then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he put forward the philosophy Drig Drishya Vichar. Mm. You know, the study of who is seeing and who is seen. Like, so as we think, I'm seeing, but actually you're being seen.
Yes.
Like that. Because you're being seen, what are you looking at?
You know. That's what he called Drishta and Drashta?
Yes. Yeah. So it's just, in other words, the Lord is seeing. And because he sees, we can also see. Because he sees everything, then we choose what things we want to see. And then depending upon that, that's where our understanding, our realization, our results of our endeavors will all be from. Right? So he's the involved. So just through the sight you can see. Because we always think we're the doer. Mm-hmm. But actually, he's the original cause. And we're just taking part as an instrument. So that's the... Yeah, so like this. So you can see is that it's a Vedic approach to the philosophy. So not well understood at the time. You know, like that. A few understood it. I think Sundarananda Vidyavinoda understood it. And... yeah, I'm not sure if anybody else understood it. Like that. So it wasn't well understood. So but amongst the scholars, then that's why they're so afraid of him, because he could function on any platform. Right. Like that. They wanted to discuss, you know, just Veda. He had no problem. Right? Because if you studied Vedanta Sutra, it's always quoting Veda. So therefore you have all the Vedic verses to establish all the philosophy. Because the point is Vedanta is the essence of Upanishads. Upanishads then are you know, Shruti. So all the quotes will go back to Shruti. So if you study Vedanta and, you know, you have a good memory, then you can discuss with anybody. There's no one you can't discuss with. Yes?
Is the Vedic philosophy therefore called Darshan? Because we can see...
Darshan, yes. Yes, yes. That's the idea, is you should see. You hear, but it's not so much as you can see. I would take it more as it's generally translated as it's revealed. But the revelation means then you can see it. Because the idea is that you hear that Shabda, and then from hearing, then that should turn into, that should, through applying, by contemplation of Anuman, then you get to understanding it as pratyaksha. You actually are able to see it in your day-to-day activities. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what inference is for. Inference is the tool by which you can take shabda and make it into pratyaksha. Right? But if you start with pratyaksha, you'll never get to the understanding of shabda. It's not possible. Does that make sense? So that's why it's revealed, but in what's revealed, you can see. So therefore, the person in the sun reveals, then you, with your eye, can see. So what you're seeing is what's revealed by him. Therefore, he who's revealing and he who is revealed are the same. That's the point. The Lord in the sun and the Lord in the eye are the same. Is that...
Yeah? Okay. So how do you get him to do it?
Devotion. That's the catch.
It's not sangeesa.
No, that doesn't seem to work so good. No. Okay, samshaya. The person in the sun and in the eye
is
the person in the sun. And in the eye, some jiva. I was saying there's an is missing here.
Yeah, I thought.
The person in the sun and in the eye is some jiva. But no, it's just is the person. Okay. Is the person in the sun and in the eye some jiva who has attained a high position because of great knowledge and piety? Or is he the Paramatma? Right? So their idea is that because they're trying to come to that elevated level, so then naturally, then that's something that can be done. Right, so then they'll be considering that, you know, is it the Paramatma or is it you know, you know, yeah, that kind of
and all get bored because they're always talking about the same, trying to establish the same thing.
It's like this, just on a very fundamental level. Here you have some nerds, right? Because they're so intellectual and so one-pointed. They sit around talking about how they're God, right? Their counterparts, a bunch of other guys, are sitting around and talking about girls. So when they're talking about the golden person, the golden hair glowing from the tip of the nails, they're not talking about a guy, they're talking about a girl. So therefore, you know, this one-tracked mind, it's just a matter of where you apply it, into karma or into jnana. Does that work? Yeah. Purva Paksha. So the reason. This person is a jiva because he has a body. He has attained a position of being worshipped because of great knowledge and piety, and because he bestows results such as rulership or objects desired by people. Right? But all the things that are there, control of karma, control of that's they're not dealing with. They just come up to, because there is a demigod who does the management of that, but his potency comes from Surya Narayan. So there's Surya Narayan, there is then the who's sitting in the seat of doing the office of the sun god. Right? Does that make sense? There's the sun god, then there's the office of the sun god. And that's what changes every month. So when you change the solar month?
Sankranti.
Yeah, the Sankranti. At the Sankranti, then that's when the position changes. So that when we get to 12th canto, it'll say who's in which month. But like the 12 Adityas, they're the 12 persons who for 1 month a year, they do the office of the sun god. Right? Does that make sense? Then we see the sun planet, then the sun rays. Right? Yes.
Does it mean that they ride the chariot?
Yeah, they ride the chariot. But the potency of that's coming from Surya Narayan. So that's actually who you're seeing. Because these other, they change.
Yeah.
Like that.
There's a whole different set of Gandharvas that travel with them. A Rakshasa, a Yaksha, the person that arranges for the ropes, for the horses. Each of them changes shifts.
Changes shifts, yeah. So it's a whole arrangement.
And they're all named.
Okay. Yeah. Got to have your Rakshasa, right?
So each month, you know, which... Yeah, because I think they're in charge of either pushing or, like, the brakes to slow down, because the sun has three speeds.
Oh, okay.
So
to speed it up or to slow it down?
Either strong, either. I'm not sure which one they do, but they do.
Okay. Cool. Then Gandharvas, then they're the entertainment?
And, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they're traveling in front, backwards, so that they can...
Oh,
sing
okay.
To,
sing, okay.
Balakili
is also that. Yeah, Balakilis do that also.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. I think they sit on the axle, like that. Yeah.
They face
him. Yeah, yeah. Hanuman did that also, I think.
Oh, yeah.
When he studied, yeah. You know, so if you can do that, then generally the sun god takes you as a serious student.
Yes.
As a serious student. If he's moving forward, so then if you can move in front of him, backwards, facing him so that he can just speak, then he generally seems to accept that this person's a good student.
Qualified.
Yeah, qualified. He is, you know, has potential. Because he's not going to stop to teach you. So you have to have that same potency that you can, you know, move at that speed and keep up. Because otherwise you might move at that speed, but then you have to, you have to think, you know, just as a mundane example, like in the, Jiang Wuji, that would be how you say it? Jiang Wuji, would that be a name? Yeah, is that a proper? Huh?
Zhang?
Zhang Wuji, yeah, okay, it's a person's name. So his qigong is so developed that he can do the qigong running and talk at the same time. But no other martial artist can do that. They have to fully focus on running. Right? But he can run and talk as if, you know, it's just, well, it's just sitting down. No?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So then the thing is here is they might be able to, by their mystic cities and that, be able to fly backwards at the speed of the sun, but to be able to then pay full attention, that's just secondary. You don't even worry about that. To be fully absorbed so that you can then hear and everything like that. That's then special. So that's what will catch the sun god's attention. And so in this way then, one can be a student.
Okay. What are they doing for the 11 months?
For the 11 months?
Okay,
yeah. A nut, sir. A beach, pina coladas.
That seems like a heavy job.
No, I think that they have their own positions. Like Varuna, he has his own management. So, but once a month, he takes care of the duties of the son.
It's a welfare, you know, like what you have to do.
It's pro bono, yes. Yes, it's like a, yeah. Public service, yeah. Like that. Vamanadeva, he does for 1 month. Because he's one of the... It means the 12 sons of Aditi, they're the ones that take care of it. That's the Adityas, are them, and then there's the Daityas, you know, that are like that. So
sun god is Vivaswami.
Yes. Okay.
This is an interesting point here, because we're saying that their doubt is coming from this idea that by external endeavor they gain a position. So you can also see that in the same material field, by external endeavor I'll gain whatever I want. So even the doubts that are coming up, that's by some external manifestation I'll get to where I need.
Yes, yes, yes. Because the point is anything mundane will be about the secondary. Spiritual will always be about the primary. But the two go together. There's a non-difference. But you have to know how that non-difference works. You can't switch them. Right? Because in logic, you have something that works one way but not the other. You can have fire with no smoke, but you can't have smoke without fire. So it's not an equal comparison. Does that make sense? So in the same way as that, the supreme can exist without manifesting his energies, but the energies can't exist without him. But they're non-different, they're simultaneous. So how do you know the Lord except through some manifestation? But the point is that manifestation is fully dependent on the Lord. So there's a difference, there's a non-difference and a difference. That's the meaning of Achintaveda Tattva. So that becomes the difficulty, is that the secondary is important only because of its connection to the primary. As soon as we make the secondary more important than it needs to be, that's mixed devotional service, right? Like that. Or when we consider that because of the secondary, then the primary will manifest, that's just not even our philosophy, saying that bhakti comes from karma or jnana. You know, that's what I'm saying. Oh, well, if we organize society and we manage very nicely, then devotional service would go better. No. If you have good devotional service, then you can manage nicely. But trying to manage, make management, it won't generate devotion. Does that make sense? So it's not that any secondary aspect has a problem. Anything that's recommended is good. But its value is only in connection with the primary. That's why you'll see is we'll both Narad. I mean this whole canto, Narad Muni is recommending all these secondary activities that are, you know, given in the Veda: study, austerity, penance, brahmacharya, sannyas, vanaprastha, all these different things. At the same time, as he'll say, it's all useless if it's not connected to the Lord. So when we talk about secondary, we mean always connected to the Lord. But because we're not used to that, we're only used to secondary on its own. Secondary as knowledge, secondary as a process, secondary as a result. We're not used to primary. So we first introduce primary as the goal. But we'll still be looking at secondary for the, you know, the proper, the knowledge, the situation, the endeavor, and the particular result we get that will be offered to the Supreme. Right, so then it takes more time before we start to see all of that in connection with the primary. That's the meaning. Super soul is in everything. He is everything. Everything, then we can see primary everywhere. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's what we're trying to get to. But the difficulty is that we're so conditioned to only seeing secondary that we don't even notice that we're dealing with secondary when we should be dealing with primary. Does that make sense? It's like the little kid does not see that there's a possibility of hitting the vase with the cricket ball when he hits it around in the living room, because that's over there and he's hitting it this way. You know, the LCD, maybe that you have to worry about, but not the vase, right? Of course, he doesn't factor in things like ricochet and, you know, all these kind of things. Okay? Siddhanta. The person within the sun and I is Paramatma, not the jiva. Why? Because the section teaches qualities that belong only to the Lord, such as apahata papma. Apahatma papma means having no karma. Only the Lord is never under the control of karma. Because if they're saying that Vishnu is the supreme being in goodness, there still has to be some element of karma. Because you're working within the illusion. The illusion is controlled by the modes. Right? This cannot be said about the jiva, who is subject to karma. The jiva cannot give results such as fulfilling the desires of all people by his nature, nor is he the principal giver of results. So you can say, but the demigod, gives results, but not to all living entities. Maybe someone who does worship of him and everything like that, he gives some benefit. But this is all living entities. So that's not a jiva. Right? No demigod is doing that. Nor is he the principal giver of results. Nor is the jiva the object of worship. Because they're just taking it, if it's a form, it must be mundane. That's a weakness of their philosophy. They can't distinguish between spiritual form and material form. The argument that because he has a body, he must be a jiva is not true. For the Purusha Shukta says, Vedaham etam purusham mahantam adityavarnam tamasaf parastat. I know that great person, shining like the sun above darkness. Such statements show that the Lord has an attractive spiritual body. Right? So if you're above darkness, what is darkness? As we're talking Upanishads here in Veda. It means the material energy. Right? It means illusion. So we don't mean just he's above, so there's no night. Or he stands outside, or he's got really good light bulbs and a lot of extra ones in the closet just in case one goes out. Right? No. He's above darkness means he's above being conditioned. So he's above illusion. So that means he's transcendental. And that great person shining like the sun, so therefore that's attractive. Because if someone's effulgent, then that's their attractiveness. Right? That's, you can tell what someone's mood is by how much effulgence is there, how little. Right? So he has unlimited. So it's just a matter of, we can only see him because he allows us. Because he has so much effulgence, you'll only see effulgence. Right? That. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then Vyasadeva, then in his prayer, then he's asking, please remove this so that I can see you. Right. Bhagavatam verse reference 5.7.13. Maharaj Bharat appeared very beautiful. He had a wealth of curly hair on his head, which was wet from bathing three times daily. He dressed in a deerskin. He worshipped Lord Narayana, whose body was composed of golden effulgence, and who resided within the sun. Maharaj Bharata worshipped Lord Narayana by chanting the hymns given in the Rig Veda, and he recited the following verse as the sun rose. Footnote 11. Srila Prabhupada's comment. The predominating deity of the sun is another expansion of Narayana, Hiranyamaya, who is illuminating the entire universe. He is worshipped by the Gayatri Mantra. He is also worshipped by another hymn, by other hymns mentioned in the Rig Veda. For instance, Jaya Sada Savriti Mandala Madhyavarti. Narayana sits on his lotus flower within the sun. By reciting this mantra, every living entity should take shelter of Narayana just as the sun rises. According to modern scientists, the material world rests on the sun's effulgence. Due to the sunshine, all planets are rotating and vegetables are growing. We also have information that the moonshine helps vegetables and herbs grow. Actually, Narayana within the sun is maintaining the entire universe. Therefore, Narayana should be worshipped by the Gayatri Mantra or the Rig Mantra. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.7.13 and 14, purport. Good. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.7.14. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness. He illuminates the entire universe and bestows all benedictions upon his devotees. The Lord has created this universe from his own spiritual potency. According to his desire, the Lord entered this universe as the Supersoul, and by virtue of his different potencies, he is maintaining all living entities desiring material enjoyment. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the giver of intelligence. Right? So everything's coming from him. So this can't be describing a jiva. That's the whole point of these verses. Right? Footnote 12. In his commentary on this verse, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur emphasizes the same distinguishing characteristics of the Lord mentioned above. That Lord is beyond Prakriti, Para Raja, or is Shuddha Sattva. He fulfills the desires of the devotees, Jata Vedaha. That effulgent Lord has created this universe by his will, Manasa, entering the world, Adha, by the power of his Chit Shakti, Sware Tasa, as the Antayami. He sees the Jiva, like me, desiring happens.
Happiness.
Desiring happens from material objects. I see. So it's a matter of if he's thinking of the past happenings or the present. This means he maintains the jiva out of his mercy. Is that clear? So, in other words, but you can't be the jiva, it has to be the Lord, because the qualities attributed to that person are qualities that can only be define the Lord. Yeah? Okay. Sutra 1.1.21. Veda vyapare sach chanyaha. Veda, difference. Vyapare shat, because of the statement. Cha, also. Anyaha, another. The person mentioned is the Lord because of statements showing the difference between the jiva in the sun and the Lord in the sun. Sutra Prakashika. Here Vyasadeva shows that the golden person within the sun is not the individual spirit soul who is the sun god, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Multiple Upanishads agree on this point. Right? So this are many. So the sun god, Surya Narayan, he's always there. But the sun god, as we mentioned, changes every month. Sri Govindabhasya. One must accept the Paramatma. One must accept that the Paramatma is necessarily different from the jiva who presides over the sun or other objects. Ya'aditye tishtan Nadityan antaro yam adityo. He who resides in the sun deity, who is different from that deity, whom the deity of the sun does not know, who has the sun deity as his body, who controls the sun deity from within, is the eternal Lord within, Antaryami. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.7.9. So So the Paramatma within the sun god's heart, he is the Surya Narayan. So he guides him, he gives him that ability and that potency. But as it mentions, it's not that the sun god actually knows Surya Narayan. He just knows his office and performs his office. So it's not necessarily that he has any realization. It's not that he's not a devotee, but it's not that he understands the position of the Lord. He may or may not, but in here it's pointing out that there's a difference. Yes.
Who has the sun deity as his body? So that, does this mean the body is the sun planet?
No, it says the sun means sun deity is his body. Can either mean the sun god, or it can mean the planet itself. But we know the planets, so then generally we would work on that principle. Mm-hmm. So therefore the form of Surya Narayan will be the sun planet, because that's what we could see. Mm-hmm. Right? But the point is the potency is coming from Narayan.
Maharaj,
yes.
There's one detail that sun rays are actually the effulgence coming from the jewels of the sun god.
Okay, from the jewels. But then where does that potency come from? That's coming from the Surya Narayan. Yes. Oh, that's interesting. From his jewels. Must wear a lot of jewels. Yeah, can't even walk. Okay. Because of the distinction made between the sun deity, Jiva, and the Lord, Antayami, the text in the Chandogya Upanishad refers to the Lord. That is because the text of the Chandogya Upanishad, the Brihan Aranyaka Upanishad, should be correlated. Right? So when you see the two, then you understand what it's talking about. They're saying one is in the heart, one is there, and then also who's giving what. So one does the office of the sun, he's there, he moves on course and does all those different kinds of things. But then the other one is actually the potency behind the whole thing and what makes everything happen. So, yeah. Adhikarana 8, the topic of ether. Akashadhikaranam, Sutra reference 1.1.22. Oh, okay. It keeps going. 1.1.24 through 7. I didn't. Oh, yeah, there's around 30, isn't there? When does it switch? Or this is all within that one. Sutra 1.12. Huh? Oh, because I put them at the back. Okay, so this is all within the first pada. Okay. Mm-hmm.
This whole thing ends.
Yeah, this ends with the first pada. Okay, so then the next Adhikarana. Okay, Sutra reference 1.1.22. Some Sutra reference, okay, 1.1.22. Adhikarana, Prakashika. Adhikarana 8, along with the remaining Adhikaranas of the first pada, proceeds with the Vedanta Sutra's detailed analysis of countless Upanishadic words. To one who questions the necessity of such a painstaking ordeal, Baladev Vidyabhushan hints at the reason in a comment from latter in the pada. Because in a section of the Upanishad related to bliss, there are words describing jiva and prana, the sadhaka might meditate on jiva or prana and not Brahman to attain bliss. To prevent this mistake, this adhikarna is given separately. Govinda Bhashya 1.131. So in other words, when you're dealing with logic, generally the first thing to be established is the meaning of words. Right? It means it's a general, in a more contemporary environment, the Tarka Sangraha. It's a very small book. I'm not sure how many verses it is. I think it's like 100 verses of that. All it does is define all the words that are used. Right? And so everybody uses that as the basics. So that you know when someone says that word, then what it means. Otherwise, confusion comes if you have two different meanings of something. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Srila Vyasadeva's careful deliberations are meant to guide the sadhaka to adopt the proper devotional aims and process of perfection. Okay, so this is again a one sutra. Adhikarana.
Yeah.
Okay, and devotional. Vyasadeva's careful deliberations are meant to guide the sadhaka to adopt the proper devotional aims and processes of perfection. Because otherwise, if you're off on a word, it can throw everything off. That's why it's so careful about that. So the modern kind of approach that it's all sentiment and what people feel like and all that is actually not, one, very scientific, and it's not very exact. So then you may not be actually clear on what your aims are or the process. Right? Because then so many options are there, you get confused, and that confusion is caused by passion. Why? Because why does one want many? Because it's options. What are options? Means varieties of benefits. Right? So that's why then there's the exact meaning to words. Does that make sense? In a philosophical system dependent on scriptural authority, words assume great import, and misunderstanding the meanings can have dire consequences. Unscrupulous commentators, grammarians, and logical wranglers will seize on any opportunity to wedge into a text their speculative conclusions, right? That's where chala comes from. These sections of Vedanta Sutra, therefore, are meant to cover, quote-unquote, cover all the bases, to protect and preserve the natural, personal, and devotional intent of the Vedas. At stake in the present Adhikarana is the word Akasha, mentioned in the Chandogya Upanishad 1.9. Vyasa demonstrates how the word Akasha refers not to the elemental ether, but to the highest Brahman. Summary of the Adhikarana 8. Vishaya. The Chandogya Upanishad states, Akasha is the ultimate destination. All living entities and all material elements have emanated from Akasha, and they will again enter into Akasha. Shamshaya. What is the meaning of the word Akasha here? Does it mean the element ether, or does it mean the supreme Brahman? Purvapaksha. The word Akasha here means the element ether, because air and the other elements evolve from it. Indeed, ether is the origin of all the other elements. So they're saying that it means the whole material world, because it has a form and all that, it's something you can talk about, then it must be material. And saying it's the highest, it is the origin of all the other elements. So therefore, in their understanding, then Akash has to mean the material Akash. It can't mean spiritual. Yes?
Regarding the structure, in Panchanga Niyaya, should we always use Purvapaksha? Because if we voice their doubt, then we give our reasons, and then we come to Siddhanta. Can that be also?
Means however it needs to work. See, is that it's one thing is if the opponent as such is not present, then you can put it together in a very logical order. You make your statement, you know, and in that point, then their doubts will arise, they make their point, then you're going to discuss their point and come to the conclusion. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore it's that just as we have our point and our reason, they have their doubt and their reason. You know, so that's all it is you're just staggering that. It means we make our point, then that raises their doubt. Right? So our point has a reason, their doubt has a reason. Then the whole middle part is all your discussions about that and everything, and then bringing that close to where now you see is what they're talking about is already included in what we're talking about. And then you give the conclusion. Right. So this is, you know, just very, very short form. So we have the main point, what their doubt comes up and the reason for it, and then what is the actual, you know, conclusion.
Right? Many times this is more effective, because if you state your claim and then start giving your reasons, even though you already know they have a doubt, they're not going to listen to the reasons. But then if you address the doubt and give their reasons for the doubt, and then show how the reasons for their doubt are incomplete, then you'll still have their attention instead of, you know, because otherwise, if they don't agree with you, they have the doubt, they're not going to listen to your reasoning. But if you address it and then give them the complete picture, then they'll actually.
Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah, it's just like, let's say somebody's disturbed. The first sentence they say you understand everything and you could explain it. But if you start talking them, then they think, oh, you don't understand, and this and that. But if they sit there and talk for 45 minutes, even though you understood everything in the first 30 seconds. Then, after 45 minutes, having said everything, given you the background of everything, then now they ask, oh, what do you think? Now, if you explain it, then they'll listen. So that's the point that he's talking about, is that you've made your point, but they have a doubt, so unless you're addressing, unless your presentation includes their doubt, then they can't hear.
So it's not always necessary, but if the doubt's either a big one or a commonly held one, then this is a very effective way.
Yes, if it's just something that could be, then you can deal with it nicely in your presentation. And then in your own presentation, you can bring up what would be different things like that. Like Prabhupada will be going along and some may say, and like that, he'll do it. So you'll see in his purports, he goes through the Panchanga Nyaya very nicely like that. But here is because there's certain... It's you're presenting the philosophy, and at the same time you're presenting it such a way to clear all doubts. Right? Yes. So therefore you're just going through. You don't have someone sitting there and talking. So he already knows what are the philosophical doubts that come up, because he's Vyas. So you say he's dealing with all these points, but this is 5,000 years ago. Shankara was not that long ago. So the impersonal concept was already there. Just Shankaracharya just came in writing on that particular, you know, I'm not sure what you call it, but that process or that wave or whatever it is that's always been there. And so then he clears all those kind of doubts. Because your six schools can have all these improper understandings. So whatever they are, they'll be addressed here. So now we see we're mainly dealing with this impersonal, because it's on the level of Vedanta. But once that's kind of dealt with, then you can work with all the other schools. So you'll see is that they'll all be dealt with. Like in the beginning we saw the focus was more on, Jaimini. But now you see it's switched over more to Shankara. But it's not that Jaimini won't have this same problem, but it's just expressed more clearly by those in Vedanta than in Karma, you know, in Uttaramimamsa than Purva. So, yes?
The sun, the moon, they are celestial planets.
Yes.
So we are capable to see the gross aspect of this planet as a human being. Is the mundane scientist capable to see this celestial aspect through the knowledge of the Vedas? I mean, it's,
means you hear, but whether they understand, because unless there's some devotion towards the Lord, it won't be revealed to this level. They'll understand, you know, mechanics of the universe, the demigods, and all that kind of function. In other words, how the secondary creation is functioning. But whether they understand the primary or not, and then behind that, the Lord and his desire, that they won't get to. That's definitely they won't get to. Some may understand that there's, you know, based on the supreme, there's primordial laws, and so they'll accept that. But that takes someone who's a bit more scholarly. Right? And then there's those who understand these are the rules, this is what we do, this is the mechanics that we can see, and they can deal with that. So understanding that the demigods are there and controlling everything is actually, it's not that high of a level. You know, from the Western context, then it's beyond their capacity, therefore, you know, you'd be burnt at the stake for having such concepts. And that mentality, you know, is still there today, just they don't burn you at the stake. They just use politics, that's all. Right, you know what I'm saying? That's all. Yes, yes.
Maharaj, how Panchanga Nyaya is connected to Tatpara Lingas?
Did we discuss this, or was there something? The Tatparya Lingas are how you can understand what's the essential point. But the Panchanga Nyaya is, you could say, is more for understanding the hermeneutics of that particular point. Mm-hmm. So the two go together, but you would say is the bigger point would be the Panchanga Nyaya, because that's how you discuss and approach things. But the Tatparya Lingas will give you an understanding of what is important, what you should be focusing on. In other words, how to find the essence, how to start from. But the approach to that, or the explanation of that, will be the panchanga, jnana. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Does not refer to the element ether, but can we not say that Akash also refers to the spiritual ether, which is Brahman?
But it just means, but at this point, is we're not even discussing the distinctions within the spiritual world, right? Because right now, is the persons we're dealing with are having a difficulty telling the difference between material and spiritual.
Yeah, keeping the Mayavadi society is only for devotion, in that.
Means, yeah, that's why Prabhupada uses the term spiritual sky. So sky is Akash. So you have the material sky and you have the spiritual sky. So even the Akash here is you have the material sky, which is beyond the ether, beyond the material ether. Because in the Mahatattva, Mahavishnu lies in the material sky, but it's still Brahman, it's still spiritual. But this is the place in which the transformation of his internal potency into the external then will take place. Well, in the spiritual sky, that won't happen. So when the term sky means Akash. So we just think, oh, spiritual sky, it sounds nice and all that. In fact, I don't think devotees use the term so much anymore. Before it was very well used. But the point is we'll say, oh, it's that, you know, it's an old thing, this hippie thing. But no. It's actually a Upanishadic thing. So Prabhupada's saying spiritual sky, he just in a very pleasant, poetic way was saying what Chandogya and Brihadaranyaka Upanishads are describing. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Srila Vyasadeva refutes this argument in the following sutra, Akashastha Lingata. The word Akasha in the Vedic literature refers to the Supreme Brahman, for the description of Akasha aptly fits the description of the qualities of Brahman. Right? So it just means Brahman, so that area of Brahman where the spiritual potency is manifest, that's called the spiritual sky, or the spiritual Akash. And that's that point where the material is manifest, so that's the, yeah. Yes?
So the planets actually coming out from the body of Mahavishnu, they're floating in the spirit, in Akash, in the spiritual sky.
Yes. But the point is where's material? Because all the living entities that are floating out there when they come out, they're all in Vishuddha Sattva.
Yeah.
Right? But meaning that they have no material qualities at the time.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that their karana sharira is not there.
Right.
So their desire for being the controller and enjoyer is there. So you can, that's the point, is up to Vishuddha Sattva, you can maintain that. That's why you can merge into Brahman and still think you're the controller and enjoyer. That's why we have a problem with the impersonal, the Mayavadis. Because they're maintaining that Purusha Bhav. Because it's about, I am God, I am, Brahmananda. So that means, I am Brahman. I am that, is I'm the controller. And Brahmananda is I'm the enjoyer. It's just, in a technical way, so it sounds better.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. So, how do we get into that?
The planets floating
around. Yes, yes. So they're all sitting on the causal ocean, which is actually spiritual. That's the viraja that we talk about.
Yeah.
Right. So then within the universe, that's where then the effect of the modes of nature and everything are. Because outside you have the primordial demigods or the associates of Mahavishnu. But in the the beginning stage of the primary creation, then Krishna not having entered it. He's glanced at it and entered it as false ego and time in that, and so therefore it's all separated. But he hasn't entered himself, where therefore then there's an attraction between these elements. Otherwise, you can't make something out of something that can't stick together.
This is still pradhan.
It's separated as mahatattva, but you haven't created all the species and situations with that mahatattva. So it's just atoms of earth, but you can't stick them together and you can't combine them. You can't combine it with air and fire and this and that. So only when he enters them as attraction, right? So he's entered as time and also as Sankarshan aspect, he's entered. But only when he comes in as attraction for Jumna, then you can stick it together into things. And then particular things, depending on that, have particular goals and they have particular methods. So like that, then he enters into the universe. And then he's there, and then, like, does that make sense? And then he expands his paramatma. So when all three purushas are there, then you can work. Mm-hmm. Then you have something.
Yeah.
So
Akash exists outside of the universe and within the universe.
Yes. But within the universe, we'll say that's material Akash. That's what they're trying to say it is. But actually, there's Akash beyond, because he's the lord of that Akash what's beyond. He's the controller of this Akash. But he's actually from there. So the jiva comes from there and goes back to there.
And then the Vedanta describes that.
Yes.
Outside.
Yes. So Upanishads, always when they say that, it means the spiritual Akash. And this means here. Like that. That's good. Okay. So we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nityai Gaura Premananda ki.